And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We'll be back in a moment as we continue with Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, by the way. Our colleague from Toronto, Richard Serrett, will be hosting tomorrow night's show, and then I'll be on Sunday night, first Sunday of every month, which we also will highlight our emerging artists for the first couple hours, but we've got a great set of programs for you. And then the rest of the week, fantastic stuff. You can get the full information by going to coasttocoastam.com. We've got the schedule there for you. Let's go to Neil in Clear Lake, California, west of the Rockies. Thanks for holding, Neil. Go ahead. Not bad.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
How long have you played the harmonica?
38 years.
Really?
Yes, indeed. I started in November of 78.
I thought for a moment I had Bob Dylan coming on.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was one of my idols. He's one of my idols.
God, he was a great harmonica, and he still is a great harmonica player.
He is, man. He's still cooking. Yeah. All right. I'm planning on sticking around for just a few years longer, too, myself.
Good for you. How old are you now?
61.
Go for it. You'll get there.
Yeah, I'm practicing the bass, too, so I'm learning the second instrument, plus I'm training my voice.
Good for you.
And we're going to have some stuff going on here in Clear Lake pretty soon.
That's a great music area, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, people from the Bay come up here and just kick it and check out the new music talent.
Yeah, it's a great stuff. You were on hold for an hour. My gosh, I'm sorry.
That's okay, George. I appreciate it. It's been a couple of years since I've been trying to get on there because the phone rings and it won't let me on there.
Well, here you are. What's up?
Well, I'm saying we got a band started up, and it's going to be called Brothers.
Brothers, okay.
Yeah, we're going to be doing Latin, soul, and rock, and blues, a lot of blues.
There's a group called the Brothers Four. Remember them?
Vaguely so.
They played some pretty interesting songs in their day. They're still together, but they're not all four of them. I think they've had new ones come and go.
Yeah, that's what we are. I'm one of the new ones. There's old friends of mine a couple of them have passed on, and we're all in our 60s now, but we're going to keep plugging away.
What's your favorite group ever?
REO Speedwagon.
Really?
Yes, indeed.
That's cool.
Riding the Storm Out.
That's cool.
Pushing are two of my favorite songs.
You gotta go to a ZZ Top concert because Billy Gibbons is a dear friend of ours.
Billy Gibbons, right on.
He's one of the best guitar players out there today, isn't he?
He is.
He's magical. He is one of a kind. Well, good. Is there anything we can help you with your group once you get up and going?
Well, just come and hang out with us and have a good time. It'll be like the 4th of July most of the time.
All right. You just let us know. How long do you think it's going to be?
Oh, maybe about 6 months.
All right. I'll be ready to go. I love it when new groups are ready to go. Tommy, you got a text or tweet for us? And what do you got for us?
Yes, I certainly do. This one from Mary Ann in Iowa. What one sense could you handle living without?
What could I handle living without? Now, that's an interesting question. Let's see. What could I handle living without?
Narrow it down. It couldn't be your voice.
No.
Voice is not a sense, though, really.
I got to have a car. I got to have...
A car?
I got to have my little exercise machines and stuff.
No, what one sense? Like hearing, eyes?
Oh, a sense. I thought you meant like what one thing.
No, one sense.
What sense? You know what? Losing, and I really respect people who have lost some of their senses because to me it's very difficult. For example, you know, we've got Joe from Boston. He's blind. Close your eyes for a minute, Tom, just for a minute.
Okay.
How could you function like that? Would you go nuts? See, if you were born with sight and you've had it all your life and then you lose it, to me, it's devastating.
And I knew what I was missing.
Devastating.
Yeah.
No. I mean, you feel empty that way.
I'm talking to you right now like that. It's unbelievable.
Now open your eyes, and you've got a headset on, of course, but if you could not hear anything, you could see and everything, or if you could not talk. You know what? I would guess if I've got to lose a sense, it would be the sense of smell. I think I could get by with losing that.
You could. What about taste?
I could get by with that. I don't think taste is a sense, though, is it?
I think it is.
But you've got hearing, vision, your nose, smell.
Taste.
Yeah, maybe it is. Then there's one more. Isn't there five? Five senses?
Seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, touching?
Touching. Thanks. Danny did it again. This guy's sharp. He's right on.
Hi.
Well, that would be difficult, too. I think I'd want my limbs to be able
That's
to...
That's a hard question.
It's you know what? Thank God those of us who have our senses still have them.
You know what's amazing to me? Someone loses, like, a sense, and their other senses get better.
True. And like I say, I applaud those people who have gone without... You remember the case of Sammy Davis Jr.?
Yes.
The late singer, entertainer. Was coming back from Vegas, and in those old days, some of the cars on the steering wheel had like a little tiny handle sticking out where you held it if you were making a turn. You wouldn't have to just turn the wheel. You'd hold this little handle that was sticking out of the steering wheel. It was about like 2 or 3 inches tall, and you'd hold on to it and turn your wheel that way.
Really?
Well, he got into a car accident, and his eye went through that thing, handle.
And he got a glass eye, right?
Yeah, he was blinded. Yeah. He knocked his eye out, crushed it, and they gave him a glass eye. But even one eye, if you've lived with your senses, your vision of two eyes, even having one eye is tough because it throws off your equilibrium.
I couldn't even imagine using that thing you just described nowadays.
Yeah, in the old cars. Anyways, I'll take some more calls here. Tom in the Bronx, welcome to the show. Hey, Thomas.
Yes, how are you?
Hi there.
I'd like to say that I got a good idea for a science fiction movie. And supposing there's 8 million people in New York City, it said anyway. And suppose you had 4 million of those people that were genetically engineered eating... genetically engineered vegetables, and they couldn't eat regular vegetables, and you had 4 million people eating regular vegetables in the city that would get sick eating genetically engineered vegetables, and you would have shortages in the supermarket of genetically engineered vegetables and regular vegetables, and you would have big fights going on amongst people that they'd have to put in the army to make sure that people had got the quota each.
How did you come up with this one?
Well, I'm thinking all the time.
Sometimes you're overthinking.
It's not a bad idea. In other words, for a writer to write that up, and then you have to throw in the mad scientist that
came up with these weird veggies.
Genetically engineered.
The veggies that went crazy.
You have people who are resisting, 4 million people are resisting to become genetically engineered. And the two groups hate each other, and you have farmers that just can't keep up with the demand on each side.
Do we have permission to go try to produce this movie, Tom?
you have a writer out there listening. He can write it up.
On genetically modified veggies.
Yeah, but in other words, as opposed to regular vegetables.
All right, so you'll have the two different kinds of vegetables.
Yeah, yeah.
And people will be fighting over them.
They'll be fighting over it, and once in a while...
How about fruit, like plums?
Which?
Fruit, genetically modified fruit.
Well, whatever the
instead of veggies,
is, but it's getting, it's coming.
That'll be the
through.
Sequel. The sequel will be the fruit.
Well, perhaps so.
We're on to something.
I just came up with that idea, and I think it's good.
All right, why don't you come up with another one though?
Well, you remember Avatar?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
you
know what? I wrote a story years prior to Avatar. My stuff is written primitive style.
What do you mean by primitive style?
Well,
by hand?
You're
not a typist.
I'm not an organized writer.
You're not a professional.
To me, it's always been a hobby.
All right.
It's been a hobby, writing. And
keep doing what you're doing.
Huh?
Keep doing what you're doing.
Well, I like it. I always did like writing. I've put a lot of stuff out. Remember Reverend Moon?
Yep, I remember that. But we'll come up with the movie on the veggies, and then the sequel will be the fruit. Okay. Let's go to Wayne in Tacoma, Washington. Hello, Wayno.
Good evening, George.
How
George,
are you?
You mentioned St. Louis, and also started out with Jerry Lewis and
Dean Martin.
Dean Martin movies, and
they were horrible movies, weren't they?
For anybody over about 16 or 17, they would be. You know, they were for kids mostly. I think I was of the right age, 9 and 10 years old, when they were coming out.
I mean, they were great entertainers, but the movies were silly.
Well, yeah, they were silly, but I mean, there was a couple of them, you know, one with Anita Ekberg and another one with Shirley MacLaine.
Sure.
One was called Models and
Artists and Models.
And Artists, exactly, you know, and even at that young age, I grew up, my family, I had a beauty shop onto the house. And so I kind of grew up around a lot of pretty ladies and that, and I got an eye for good-looking ladies at a young age. And I appreciated movies with good-looking ladies in them, you know. There was a redhead that played in a lot of the Westerns that was a really good looker back then.
What are you telling us, Wayne?
Well, just that it was a combination, I think, of the comedy and some of the characters that were in the comedy with the comics that made the movie.
So you like those movies?
Well, as a 9 and 10 year old, I did. Yeah.
Could you watch one tonight?
No, I wouldn't watch.
You could.
Today.
You
know, just like I wouldn't watch the Three Stooges,
the Barry Boys, and all those things.
Or Amos and Andy, or any of those old shows. Yeah, because you know they were old stick.
They would not make it today either.
No, I don't think so. You're absolutely right. I wanted to ask you about the books you've been reading. You said you read a book.
I read one on Sinatra. I'm reading one on Dean Martin right now. I just read Johnny Carson by his former attorney. Fascinating. You get into those stories of these people that you don't really realize, and you get the inside scoop of stuff. It's fascinating.
The one with Frank Sinatra, did he come across the part where he participated in Major Bowie's Amateur Hour in New York City?
Yep.
Okay.
Pretty early into the book.
Exactly. He was one of two Amateur Hour performers that ever got a standing ovation. The other one's my friend and mentor, Tony Fontaine.
Tony Fontaine. I remember him. He used to sing... Where did he sing with? What the television show was he on?
He had his own television show out of Chicago for a while, an Amateur Hour show.
Did he sing with Jackie Gleason
on his show? He sang with a lot of people. I mean, he was popular all over the world.
I'm also thinking of the comedian Frank Fontaine, two different people, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. And people do get those mixed up, I know. He was in tremendous demand by Las Vegas and was singing in Las Vegas and was under contract by 3 or 4 record companies. And then he had his accident in the mid-60s.
What kind of accident?
Well, he was driving through Hollywood in a Mercedes convertible, and somebody ran a red light.
Ugh.
And he was unconscious in the hospital for over 3 months.
Ugh.
His actress wife was there with him every day, praying with him. She knew he had a Christian, grown up in a Christian background, and that, but he turned his back on all of that when he left home.
And he was a friend of yours?
Yeah. He became a friend of mine in 1963 when he came to our little local church in Olympia.
So he was already a success, right?
Oh yeah, he'd been a tremendous success. But he came out of consciousness. He and his wife prayed and said, "Lord, if you let me live, I'll sing only for you." And he did, and all these record companies and all these contracts, they sued him, and he lost everything financially. But he went on to become a great success in singing gospel music and, toured the world doing that over 330 days out of the year, sing for queens and kings all over the world, presidents all over the world, sang for almost all of the presidents from Eisenhower on up.
Tony Fontaine. I got to look him up.
Yeah, he's a fantastic guy. Good story about him on Wikipedia.
You ever see Sinatra sing live?
No, I've never had that privilege of seeing him sing live.
I did once, and he came to St. Louis, and he was electrifying. Yeah.
And about St. Louis, I watched on the 4th of July, there was a program on how booze made America. It was narrated by the guy that does all these ugly job shows. I can't think of his name right now, the narrator. You might know who he is, but, he does all, goes around on, and does videos on all these different jobs that are hard and, and hard to do. And he told a real, it was a 3-hour special. And St. Louis came into the picture because of the fact that there was an entrepreneur out of New York City that saw that he could make a lot of money. St. Louis was the edge of the frontier where all the Western guys would go to, the guys that the mountain men that would hunt the skins and that. And so he got the idea of having a wagon train going to St. Louis to pick up all these pelts, and what he brought from the big city, New York, to St. Louis was cases and cases of whiskey and women.
There you go on the women again,
Well, it was all part of the story about how this guy became probably the first billionaire, in our money.
What year was this?
In the United States. This was in the late 1870s, 1860s, right around that time.
Way before my time, for sure. Time for maybe one more quick call. Let us see, before the break. No, we're running out. Louise in Louisville. Let's get you in real fast. Louise, hi there.
Yes, thank you for accepting my call. I wanted to tell you the name of the movie that Cassius Clay wanted to take me to go see, but my mother said no because we were too young.
Who also has become Muhammad Ali.
Yes, but at that time he was Cassius Clay.
Okay.
And so he said, Louise, would you like to go see this movie? He was so excited about it, and I said, yes. And I was just sitting there, and I didn't know what to do. He said, go and ask your mother, can you go with me Saturday? So I wouldn't ask her, and I came back, and he said, what did she say? I said, she said we were too young. He said, that's okay. I'll go and see it, and then I'll come back, and I'll tell you all about it.
Now, was this before he really got into boxing?
He was only 13.
13?
13. This was when he was 13.
That was amazing. What a great story. A 13-year-old Cassius Clay, who ended up being the world's heavyweight champion of the world, Muhammad Ali. Up next, we're going to talk a little bit about a coming ice age. Stand by for that on Coast to Coast AM. Is there a coming ice age? Robert Felix, of course, thinks the cold is coming, and it seems that science may be agreeing with him. Robert Felix, former architect, became interested in the ice age cycle back in 1991. He then spent the next 8.5 years full-time researching and writing about the coming ice age in his book, Not by Fire, but by Ice. Since then, he's also written Magnetic Reversals and Evolutionary Leaps as well. One of our favorite guests, and here he is, Robert Felix. Hello, my friend. How are you?
Good. How are you, George?
Good. Looking forward to this. Hope you have great holidays, Robert, and kick in the new year the right way, huh?
No, I'm looking forward to it. Yes. Lots of good food.
So I was in Denver last weekend taping our Beyond Belief television shows, and they were complaining about how warm the weather was and the fact that they had no snow, which was uncanny for them at that time of year. Well, today they got blasted. Snow has hit, and it's becoming more normal again. In St. Louis, where I am right now, Robert, it hit close to 80 degrees today, almost a record, but it's going to get cold again. You have always said that we're in the coming stages of an ice age, and now there are some scientists who are beginning to say the same thing. Give us an update on that.
Well, there are. And the latest one, I just put it on my website today, but there's a Dr. Habibulo Abdusamatov. Boy, that is a...
That's a great name. You could pronounce it any way you want. Who's going to question it, right?
But anyway, he's an astrophysicist. And he says that a new little ice age has begun. Not that it's going to begin, not at some future date, but right now. And now, Dr. Abdusamatov, I mean, he's an astrophysicist, but even then he's not an ordinary astrophysicist. He's head of the Space Research Laboratory at the Russian Academy of Sciences, and he's head of the Russian part of the International Space Station. So, you know, this guy is no slouch. And he says that we are already in a new little ice age. So, you know, when I first came out with this, I think the first time I was on Coast to Coast was back in 1997 mm-hmm. with Art Bell. And I said that we would be admitting that we were an ice age within 20 years. And at least Dr. Abdusamatov is going along with it.
You might have been the basis for the book that he wrote with Whitley, The Coming Global Superstorm.
I doubt it. I don't think I was the basis for it, but but I don't know. Who knows?
You never know. So New Zealand got hit with a huge earthquake last week. They had tsunami warnings coming up. And they talked about flashes of light that were in the skies. What do you think of that?
Well, they did. And, you know, that just intrigued me. I had to look up something that I had in my book. Because way back in the book, I have one chapter that is actually called Earthquake Lights and Crazy Snakes. And it's just a fun chapter. But I started out, if I can just talk a little bit about it. But on December 16, 1811, one of the strongest earthquakes to ever strike the heartland of the United States tore through the frontier city of New Madrid, Missouri. So I don't know if you have any people near there, but
I'm there. I'm close by. I'm in St. Louis. We're at the tip of it.
Okay. All right. Then you probably heard about it then. But trees twisted and splintered as entire forest crashed to the ground, while huge cracks, some so wide that no horse could jump them, yawned open in the frozen soil. Shaking with sleep from their weary eyes, it was 2 o'clock in the morning. Terrified townspeople leapt from their beds only to watch helplessly as their cabins and chimneys fell to the earth and the ground collapsed beneath their feet. Collapsing, settling, slumping, whatever you call it, New Madrid sank 1.5 stories into the ground, while entire islands disappeared beneath the surly brown waters of the Mississippi. Then the river rushed backwards as 3-story tall waves surged upstream, overtopping the river's banks and gushing into newly sunken areas to create St. Francis and Wheelfoot Lakes in Tennessee. Happy holidays, New Madrid. It looked like the end of the world, or a battlefield, or Armageddon, said panicked settlers, as the air grew thick with sulfurous vapors and eerie flashes of light burst from the ground, illuminating the skies like distant lightning. Earthquake lights. So that's how that chapter starts out, earthquake lights and crazy snakes.
And the Mississippi went the opposite way. That earthquake was so big.
Yeah, it actually ran uphill for a little while, and then it did create those 2 new lakes that didn't even used to exist there. You know, the bells, it rang, that earthquake was so big that it rang church bells in Boston. Huge. But But anyway, it's the point was, you know, when I saw that New Zealand was having earthquake lights, I mean, I've had people email me and say, oh, no, it had to have been electric transformers or something and wires rubbing together. But it was some of it was out over the water. There's no electric transformers out there to be doing that. And these earthquake lights, I mean, I also write in there about, I'm not sure how to say it, Tangshan, it was probably Tangshan, China, but there was a great big earthquake back there in the 70s that had huge lights. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and these lights lit up the sky. They covered something like more than 100,000 square miles. It was just huge. And just prior to that, It was February, and somehow snakes were getting the message, and animals get the message, but snakes were crawling out of the ground, and then they were instantly freezing to death. But something, whether it's magnetic forces or what, was telling them. Catfish were jumping out of the water. Cockroaches were twirling in circles. So that stuff is so fascinating sometimes. You wonder why in the world it happens.
Robert, why do you think we're in the beginning stages of an ice age? What are you seeing out there to give you that conclusion?
Well, the number one, I guess, is that there is actually a cycle to ice ages that we seem to ignore, is that ice ages have a tendency to come and go about every 11,500 years. There's apparently a major ice age about every 23,000 years, but then with a pulse of ice age at about the 11,500-year point. The problem that we have is that the last ice age occurred almost exactly 11,500 years ago. So I know we've got all this talk going on about global warming, but I see us just because of that cycle. There's a lot of different cycles, but there's just so many different cycles. There's the 11,500-year cycle. There's the Little Ice Age cycle coming about every 360 years. There's a solar retrograde cycle coming about every 180 years. And we are right at the point where every one of those cycles is due to repeat itself. So regardless, I think we're being arrogant to think that humans can affect the climate enough to avoid an ice age.
You've talked about underwater volcanoes that have created climate change because they heat up just like a slow boiler, right?
Yes, absolutely. I have a one chapter in my book. Again, it goes after this, but we've learned a lot. You know, when I started researching and writing Not by Fire, but by Ice, that was in 1991, scientists guesstimated that there were 10,000 submarine volcanoes in the entire world, you know, underwater volcanoes. And then just a couple of years later, marine geophysicists discovered another more than 1,100 that they'd never heard of before, just off the coast of Easter Island. And those underwater volcanoes, we're talking huge volcanoes. Some of the newly found volcanoes rose almost 1.5 miles above the seafloor, but the water's so deep there that even though they're 1.5 miles tall, their peaks are still 1.5 miles below the water's surface. And these were small area about the size of New York State. But the thing is, we have no idea how many volcanoes may be down there. What we know is that they just pump huge amounts of heat, red-hot basalt, actually. It's up to 1,200 degrees Celsius, meaning 2,200 degrees Fahrenheit. I mean, what is that? 10 times the boiling point. And it's just pumping this red-hot basalt into the seas. And so way back when the book first came out, I made the audacious suggestion that those underwater volcanoes were heating our seas. And, you know, the global warming alarmists just scoffed at me. You know, 11,000 submarine volcanoes could not possibly be heating the seas, they said. But the thing is that we keep finding new ones. The number of number of underwater volcanoes, they keep finding more and more. By 2005, NASA was forced to admit that there might be 1 million underwater volcanoes. And as many as 75,000 of those would have been active. I mean, it's just the number keeps growing and growing and growing. Then I think probably the last time I was on with you, I think that that number had risen to 3 million underwater volcanoes. And yesterday I posted an article. Now there are new studies out that are estimating there may be as many as 10 million underwater volcanoes.
Well, that's enough to cook things, isn't it?
It's got to be. I mean, and you got that stuff pouring into the water at 2,200 degrees. Now, back when we were only 11,000, maybe they were right. And maybe that couldn't possibly have been heating the seas. But I mean, if anybody's been to Hawaii and seen where the lava is pouring into the sea, the water's actually boiling where that lava pours into the sea. I have not had a chance to see that. That's one of my goals, is to see that someday.
That would be something else. So, you know, with this coming ice age, is that dangerous for everybody? Are we going to be able to make it through that?
Oh, I'd like to say yes, but we're not prepared for it at all. What I worry about truly is, I should say we can get to this later, but the whole world will not be covered with ice. But what I worry about is that it'll start in the north, is that the wheat fields, the breadbaskets of the world will be covered. And, you don't have they don't have to be covered with mile deep glaciers. All you got to do is have enough snow remain on the ground for a whole year through a planting season, and we're in trouble. And so the thing I've been saying all along is I think we'll be fighting in the streets for food long before we're covered by ice. So, yes, I think it'll be very dangerous.
All right, my friend. Robert, for people who want information on what you do and where you go, not by fire but by ice, I want to talk about magnetic reversals when we come back in a moment. But give us your website, please.
IceAgeNow.info.
Simple as that. And when you started doing this, you gave up architecture just to concentrate on this, didn't you?
I did. I spent 8 years full time researching and writing a book, no pay. I don't quite understand where it came from, but it just grabbed me, and I didn't have any choice. I went to the University of Washington Natural Sciences Library just about every single day and just spent the time there researching.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware, but now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. Turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever way.
For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Greg Bishop, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.